informative and entertaining. The Aaron Rand Show. Catch Aaron live weekdays 3 to 7 on CJAD 800.
Do you remember this? The theme song, from Little House on the Prairie. And this year marks the 40th anniversary of the show's debut on NBC. It ran for 10 years, from 74 to 84, still has a huge fan base to this day. And you may not know that one of the stars is a Montrealer, while she's been living in Montreal now for quite a few years, Melissa Sue Anderson, who played Mary Ingalls on Little House on the Prairie. Melissa, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Barry. How are you?
I'm very well. How are you?
I'm good, thanks.
How long have you been living in Montreal?
Just about almost 12 years, actually.
Yeah, I had no idea. That's a pretty good secret right there. What brought you to Montreal?
Well, actually, it was my husband's business at the time. You know, he's a producer, writer in the entertainment business. And at that time, there was a lot of Canadian co-production going on, and it was really the right thing to do. And it was terrific for our kids because they already were learning French. So my daughter already spoke it fluently, and so it's been a great 12 years here.
That's wonderful. Melissa Sue Anderson, who played Mary Ingalls on Little House on the Prairie. And I mean, you were what, 11, I think, when you started on this show, right?
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
So you literally grew up in front of North Americans.
I did. And the 40-year thing is just, it's horrible to think of it that way. It's just awful. But yeah, it believe it or not, yeah, it's 40 years.
Well, don't feel so bad, because a little while ago I interviewed, and of course now her name is escaping me, but Tabitha from Bewitched, and that was on the 50th anniversary
of
the debut
of
that show.
Wow.
Aaron Murphy. Aaron Murphy, thank you very much.
Right,
yeah.
Wow.
So what was it like as a kid? And you played, your character was blind, right?
Yes.
How difficult was that?
It was difficult, and I was, you know, a sighted character before. I could see, and then my character went blind. So it was very difficult. Technically, there was a lot of stuff, you know, many, many things to learn. But, you know, it was dramatically and, you know, it was a terrific challenge for me.
I bet. And I understand you guys had a reunion on the Today Show, I think, a couple of weeks ago.
We did, in New York, yes.
And what was it like?
It was great, actually. It was very fun. We most of us hadn't seen each other. We figured it out since Mike Landon's funeral, which was 23 years ago.
It's been that long.
Yes.
Wow. I remember, you know, look, I'm in my late 40s, so I certainly remember your show very well, Bonanza, before that. And, you know, Highway to Heaven, he was the star of that show as well.
Right.
Afterwards. And I mean, look, he was one of the most popular actors in American TV, I think, for many, many years. He had that long hair. I mean, a handsome guy. And I'll never forget, you know, when he passed, as so many people were so, they felt like they knew him so well. Like people come up to you, I'm sure, and they say, like, they feel like they know you so well. But what I'd love to ask you is, like, what kind of a guy was Michael Landon? Because he seemed like everybody's, you know, big brother, although I know he played the little brother on Bonanza. But regardless, I think you catch my drift.
Right. And that's how I described him, actually, as a, you know, people used to ask me, is he like a father to you? And I said, well, no, he's more like a big brother.
Yeah.
But he was, you know, when he passed away, I think there was a quote of mine that was, you know, he was America's family man, and he really was.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
His family was very, very important to him, and he was a great to work for, a terrific boss. You know, he didn't act like your boss, but he was involved in everything. You know, he wrote most, you know, many, at least half the episodes. He directed half the episodes or more. He executive produced all of them, and you know, he was all the while a really nice, down to earth, just exactly what you would think.
I'm glad to hear that. Yeah.
Right.
Kind of like what you see is what you get.
Yeah, he was.
That's
overall
great. That's
you know
great.
He
yeah.
had I wrote a book about 4 years ago, and it kind of, you know, I talk about him quite honestly, but you know, he had his you know, his darker side, I should say. But it was, you know, again, like I say in the book, you know, I loved him. I did. He was very important to me. He taught me a lot, and he really was a terrific guy.
I know there are still so many fans of your show who call themselves bonnet heads, right? And there's like festivals. What I mean, it must give you a tremendous amount of satisfaction to know that the appeal is still so strong 30 years after the show ended, and you know, 40 years after it started.
It is, and it is kind of mind-boggling when I've done I did one book signing at a museum where celebrating Little House, and the people that came, it was generations. You know, it was the granddaughter, the mother, and the grandmother. And I mean, that was preparing me for the 40 years.
I guess so.
It really was, but it's great. You know, it really is something to be proud of. And it was a great thing to be a part of.
Do me a favor, listen to this clip. This is not from Little House on the Prairie, but from another show in which you appeared in one episode.
I didn't come here to see Cindy. I came to see you.
Me? What for?
To thank you for making that boy stop teasing me in school today. You're very brave.
Oh, it wasn't anything.
It was too, and I really appreciate it.
I'll never forget the name Millicent.
Me either.
Because of you on the Brady Bunch. And I told the story earlier, you kissed Bobby at least once, I think a couple of times. And the fireworks, though, I will never forget that. Maybe it's sad that I'll never forget that. But when I saw that, you know, I was just looking up a bit of information on you today, and I said, that's right. She was on the Brady Bunch.
That was my first speaking role. I had done commercials before that, but not any episodic television at all until that. And it was so exciting because I was a fan of the Brady Bunch.
Yeah.
I watched it every Friday night, so it was so exciting. But then when my episode aired and I watched it, I was horrified. I mean, I really, and not because of what I saw so much. That wasn't the issue. It was exactly what you just did to me. It was my voice.
Oh.
I was horrified. I you know, in those days, you didn't hear your voice very often. You didn't, you know, there weren't answering machines, and unless you were an actress, or you know, you really didn't hear your voice that often. And I couldn't believe that was what I sounded like.
That's hysterical.
So that was really scary.
I'm so glad we had some time to catch up with you this afternoon, Melissa. A real treat for me.
Oh, well, thank you, Barry. And I've listened to you, you know, over and over again.
Well, that's very sweet. Thank you for that.
Oh, really? I am being totally honest.
No, I believe you. I believe you.
Yeah.
Thank you, Melissa. This is it was a real treat for me to talk to you, and I'm sure for a lot of people to hear your voice again for the first time in probably a number of years. Melissa Sue Anderson, Mary Ingalls on Little House on the Prairie, and Millicent on the Brady Bunch. So nice to talk to you. Have a great weekend.
You too. Thank you.
You're very welcome.
You're listening to the Aaron Rand Podcast. Hear the show live weekdays 3 to 7 on CJAD 800.
Well, right now it's time to say hello to James Many of the Montreal Gazette. James, how are you this afternoon?
I'm good. How are you?
Not too bad, but I'm curious about Arthur Porter's paycheck, and I mean,
we all.
Yeah, I know. I mean, a lot of money for, you know, he lived in a condo, from what I understood, but he was still getting allowances for hotels and things. You know, I'm trying to figure this out.
Hotel stays in Montreal, and no, the more you find out what we at the Gazette had to sort of like, use pick and shovels to get, and finally we're in front of the Access to Information Commission, and then the MUHC finally decided, okay, well, we'll let you see them before the decision's made. Okay, let's put things into context. Right now, Arthur Porter is in a Panamanian jail fighting extradition to come back to Quebec because he faces charges of breach of trust and fraud. But when you look at the details of this, when you look at a guy who's got a base salary of about $186,000, who gets a $63,000 on-call indemnity, I guess that means if they have to call him after hours. But I'm guessing if you're a CEO, you're not exactly punching a clock either.
No, I guess not.
Car allowance, hotel allowance, the stuff. If you ballpark it, what I loved was I presume based on his base salary of $185,000, a 30% discretionary bonus, annual bonus. So that could be another $50,000 for him.
And whose discretion?
Well, at the board's, I guess, or the discretion of whoever the hell was signing off on these expenses.
I suppose so. Yeah.
And listen, you know what? It's like I know how sausages are made, and I know that and there are a lot of people listening to us out there who are on the one hand are saying, expense account. What is this expense account you speak of, Earthman? And there are other listeners who are saying, you know what, I have an expense account, and you do run up stuff, and I guess if you're in those circles, the price tag is going to be that much higher. But believe me when I tell you, we're not just talking about International Widget here. We're talking about the McGill University Health Center, which has been, it's part of the health sector, which has always been strapped for cash, which always wants more money. And the optics on this are just so breathtakingly obscene that the question isn't so much, how could Arthur Porter actually put in for this stuff? It's who could have signed off on it? Because unless he was stamping his own expense accounts, there are more questions here than answers. In the grand scheme of things, $300,000 is not a big chunk of money. Some people might argue that $22.5 million is a lot of money, which is the amount of the contract that Dr. Porter is alleged to have tweaked and part of the charges that he's facing should he ever come back to Canada. But it really is a daunting kind of a story. And I can tell you that if you remain patient with us, the big question I had on this story today is when they paid $59,000 down for his car, which was also covered by his car allowance, when they paid 59 grand down, I'm saying, what the heck kind of car could that be? We found out, and if you stay with us at MontrealGazette.com and read tomorrow's Gazette, you'll find out what kind of a car it is. All I'm saying is don't have a mouthful of coffee when you read what kind of a car it is.
No, for 59 large.
Yeah, well, that's the down, my friend. That's the down payment.
Oh.
Okay, so don't be in the process of swallowing your coffee when you see what kind of a car he had.
We have to wait till tomorrow.
Yeah, well, or they might post it tonight on MontrealGazette.com, but
okay.
I can assure you tomorrow you'll have the answer to that question.
Okay, Philippe Couillard meeting with NDP leader Tom Mulcair today in Quebec City, and there's already been some talk, James, about the Dying with Dignity bill, which I think you and I discussed yesterday, possibly, or I did with somebody this week, and it's going to be law, it looks like, within a couple of months. And, I mean, this is, and Tom Mulcair was talking about how he expects there probably will be a fight from the federal government because, from Ottawa's point of view, it's part of the criminal code. Quebec looks at it from more as a health issue,
yeah,
if you like. But either, and I said before, we've already had a debate about this for months because the National Assembly has been talking about this for a long time. But I figured, once it passes, you ain't seen nothing yet.
Well, no, and I mean, the thing is, the National Assembly, by and large, Philippe Couillard, when he was still in the opposition, said that this is a free vote for the caucus.
Yeah.
And it looked like it was going to go through. It looked like there was a certain amount, because it's not just, there are provisos in at least the version of the law that I saw. This is not just a blanket, dying with dignity. This is not a blanket euthanasia bill. That said, it is an issue like abortion, which really divides people and divides people who could be in the same party. It is a really it's a hot potato issue. It's also one that is going to have to be looked at, but I think by all levels of government as the years go by. The population is getting older, and you and I just got through talking about how less than sterling our entire health system is in this country.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wants to be placed in this position. It may be one of those debates that we don't want to have, but we're going to have. But it's also interesting that here you have Thomas Mulcair, who was once a provincial government colleague of Philippe Couillard's, right? They were in cabinet together, and after Couillard left over the whole Mount Orford thing, and he went into federal politics. But they both know each other, and on the one hand, this is a kind of, well, it's a routine thing. Premier Couillard has already met with Prime Minister Harper, so it's only normal that the head of the official opposition should also meet with him.
Sure.
But there is that interesting same wavelength thing. I mean, I can't think of two people who'd be more distant from each other than Stephen Harper and Philippe Couillard, but on the other hand, here we have Philippe Couillard and Thomas Mulcair, and this is something that Mulcair hammered away at this afternoon, that there is a strong connection between him and this particular government, or certainly its premier, and the province. So it's going to be a very, very interesting, as you say, the political dynamics going to be fascinating to see whether the Tories are going to try and play on this. Certainly the reaction the Tories gave this week to Kathleen Vale when she asked our immigration minister, when she asked for a break on the temporary foreign workers program and was basically told, and not even directly, but told, go hire your own kids and your own unemployed.
Yeah.
I think, and by this is by Jason Kenney, the federal immigration
minister.
And he's just the whole tone of it was like, you don't like it, shut up. And I found it interesting that it seemed rather confrontational. And I think to a certain extent, you know, the Harper conservatives may have been hoping for a PQ government because let's face it, they thrive on confrontation. They thrive on that kind of your force.
You really think so? I mean,
oh, absolutely. Come on. I mean, for the past eight years. The Harper government really has made a point of the Harper. All the wheels turn together in the Harper government when they have a common enemy, and I really am seeing an interesting dynamic forming here in terms of here is a Quebec that we don't know what to do with. It's certainly a Quebec that we can't win. And it's a Quebec that we can't go after because it's separatist, because it isn't. And we have a complication of a premier who not only is unabashedly promoting federalism, but also bilingualism. So how can we go after this? Remember, this is the same Stephen Harper who did all Quebec Anglophones a favor a few years back by declaring the Québécois people a nation inside of Canada.
That's true.
In other words, it's like I will do anything I can. Okay, to grab myself some votes. We saw how well that worked with Pauline Marois last month. I don't know if that's still going to fly in 2015, but we'll have to wait and see. No, but definitely there's a fascinating dynamic developing here, and it'll be, as I say, Thomas Mulcair is kind of the icing on the cake on all of this. So it'll be interesting to see what kind of a tone of conversation will exist between the feds and this liberal and apparently federalist government.
We got to run, James, but I'm looking forward to going online tonight and looking at that car.
Do not be drinking or eating when you get to the line that tells you what kind of a car it is.
Okay, fair enough.
Okay?
Have a great weekend. James Manny of the Montreal Gazette.
You're listening to the Aaron Rand Podcast. Hear the show live weekdays 3 to 7 on CJAD 800.
Have you noticed more cars with Canadians' flags as the Canadians continue to advance in the playoffs? I sure have. Look, it happens whenever this kind of stuff occurs. It'd be nice if it happened more often. Well, it turns out the only Canadian manufacturer making them has sold out. But I know a lot of you still want to get your hands on a Canadian's flag for your car. On the line with me right now is Anita Chandon, the general manager of Hunter Canada, which manufactures these flags. Hi, Anita.
Hello, how are you?
You're the exclusive manufacturer, if I'm not mistaken, right?
There are a few. We're the only ones that actually produce domestically. It allows us to capitalize on opportunities like this.
When do the flags sell out this week?
They sold out right after Game 7, and we're in production all weekend. We'll have more in on Tuesday.
So the good news is people who want these flags, and boy, I mean, there's at least enough, we hope, probably a couple more weeks at least, of playoff hockey in this town. So did you say as of Tuesday?
As of Tuesday, they'll be back in stock. Our retailers are already asking us what we're doing for championship, so we're in the design mode right now.
Oh, okay. Oh, so maybe something a little special if they actually get to the final round.
Something very special.
Okay. I'm not going to twist your arm here to let me in. I know this is it's a secret, and I appreciate that. But during the Boston series, like leading up to Game 7, I'm sure people were, you know, they were flying off the shelves, right?
They were flying off the shelves in the province of Quebec and just around Quebec. It's interesting, we were selling more Boston flags in Ontario and out west, but now we're starting to get orders from out west also, even Toronto, for the Montreal flags.
Okay, so how do you like that? Maybe the Canadians are the national team right now. I mean, I know they're...
We
can only hope. And so how many are you making per day, Anita?
We can produce between 12,000 to 15,000 flags a day. We're also doing 3x5 flags. We do foam fingers, tattoos, shot glasses, you name it.
That's terrific. And I'm just curious, how much do the flags cost?
The cost at retail, there's a couple of different styles and models, but you can go to retailers and buy them anywhere between $14.99 and $19.99.
A piece, okay. That's not so bad. Yeah, and it's a nice keepsake, and it's the kind of thing where you can use it the following year and on and on. And you just hope you have the opportunity to use these as much as you possibly can, right?
Absolutely.
That's terrific. Anita, thanks a lot.
No problem. Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Anita Chandon is the general manager of Hunter Canada, the flag manufacturer. And you might have seen some people walking around town with unusual haircuts. and with literally a Habs logo shaved into people's heads. And on the line with me right now is Corey Shapiro, who is the owner of Notorious Barbershop in St. Henry. Well, they'll be very happy to shave the CH into your head, right, Corey?
We have three chairs full right now of people getting the haircuts.
It's pretty impressive technique, let me tell you.
Yeah, it's a very rare art form. It's not taught at any cosmetology or barbering school, so it's more like an art. We have two of the only barbers in Canada that can do it, and one of them is actually the world champion in barbering designs. So it's pretty impressive.
I didn't realize it was that sophisticated.
We're pretty sophisticated people down here at Notorious.
I don't blame you. Look, it's pretty intricate work, right?
Yeah, it's even more intricate than doing a tattoo because every single surface is different. So not only is the surface different, and there could be bumps, but also different hair types. And it's been pandemonium. We've been doing every single one of the games for the playoff in front of the Bell Center. They have us doing the cuts there, and then we've had probably over 400 or 500 requests to do in barbershop designs and even more intricate stuff than we do outside of the Bell Center. So we've had people who have asked for us to do facial portraits of them and PK Subban together. We've had a guy come in and try to get his chest shaved. It's been pretty interesting.
Yeah, that was not me, by the way. is this unusual? Have you ever seen business like this spike in other playoff runs, Corey?
Well, to be honest, our barbershop's only 8 months old.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Okay.
Unfortunately, we haven't been around for them.
But hey, the future is yours, right? I mean, so what is it, if I come by your shop, what's it going to cost me?
If you come by the shop, it starts at $75
okay. To
do a portrait or a logo. And if you come to the Bell Center any time up to 3 hours before the game, it's covered by the Canadians, so it's their way of giving back to the community.
Beautiful. So, in other words, show up at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning outside the Bell Center.
I would show up at 8 to get in line for this.
Better idea. Thank you. Corey, exactly. Terrific stuff.
Are you going to be there
tomorrow? You know what? I'm not sure, but if I am, I'll probably skip the haircut, though. Not that you're necessary.
Got your name first on the list.
Is that right?
Don't be shy, man.
I might have to be there at 8 o'clock in the morning on Avenue des Canadiens then. Thanks a lot, Corey.
No problem. Great speaking to you.
And you. Corey Shapiro, who owns a Notorious Barbershop in St. Henry. And he was just talking about the intricacy and how it might even be more challenging than doing a tattoo. Well, with me now is Chris Saliba, who is the owner of Adrenaline Tattoo downtown. Hi, Chris. How are you?
I'm well. How are you, sir?
So what do you think? What's tougher, the tattoo or the actual haircut?
I can't really say. I don't cut hair. I'm thinking every one of these artists is facing their own challenge.
That's true.
Whether it be the shape of the head, the shape of the body, the placement, everything. We all got a pretty big job to do.
So these are free tattoos you're offering, right, Chris?
Yes, sir.
On site and at your shop as well?
Yeah.
That's amazing. So what's demand been like?
The demand has been incredible. We're about sold out for the whole 3 hours in about 10 minutes. So people pretty much got to hang out and make sure that somebody doesn't show up for their tattoo if they want to get one. We've been real busy. But regardless, have tattoos at the shop off the chain every year, every playoff.
Is it just the CH more or less, Chris, or is it something a little more...
Most of the time it's the CH when people are coming in. But because we were doing... such a large quantity of tattoos for 3 hours. We wanted to do like a couple flash sheets so we can give people choices so it wasn't like branding cattle.
Right.
So people get to choose what they want, different CHs. We got little rockets, little goalie masks. We got, we'll customize for about 5 minutes with you to make it yours.
Very cool. So again, just to make sure I'm clear, you'll also be outside the Bell Center tomorrow, or is it?
Yes, sir. We'll be getting up around 7 to set up. You're going to have to show up probably about 9:45.
Get your tattoo, get your haircut, get a flag. I mean, it's practically a one-stop shop.
It's the best day of your life.
No kidding. Thank you very much. I appreciate that because I've been waiting for it. Chris, thanks so much for this, eh? And good luck. Hope the Habs go all the way.
Go Habs, go.
Chris Saliba, the owner of Adrenaline Tattoo.
You're listening to the Aaron Rand Podcast. Hear the show live weekdays 3 till 7 on CJAD 800.
CJAD political insider Jean LaPierre. Hi there, Jean.
Hi, how are you?
Well, you were right about this. I'm not surprised. Jacques Chagnon, Speaker of the National Assembly, right?
Yeah, and nobody else ran for the job. So on Tuesday, he'll be confirmed as a Speaker for the National Assembly, the member of the the National Assembly for Westmount Saint Louis, Jacques Chagnon, who's been a great speaker, I must say. And so he got respect from all sides of the National Assembly. And so on Tuesday, he'll be back on his chair as speaker. And so for the next 4.5 years.
Jean, affidavits supporting police searches at the engineering firm Roche. And look, this isn't good for anybody. It's pretty embarrassing across the board.
That's been going on for quite a while. But today we got to see the affidavit that were used by the police to convince the judges to go and search the house of Marc-Yvan Côté, the former Liberal minister who was vice president of development at Roche and also the Roche offices. And obviously, it becomes an embarrassment for Roche, but also for some politicians because that company, that engineering firm, was very active in the Quebec City area, Eastern Quebec. And so a former member for Gaspé, for example, Georges Mamelonet, we hear that at the last minute for his election campaign, Roche found $5,000 for him, and then he sent back an email saying, I'll be there for you, that type of stuff.
Yeah.
They're claiming that the mayor, former mayor of Gaspé, François Roussy, got a free trip to Saint-Malo. And one guy who's current minister, Sam Ahmad, who was vice president of Roche for between 1998 and 2003, was on the spot today because we hear that the way they worked at Roche is that every vice president was asked to contribute to political parties, and then they would add those amounts to his yearly bonus, so they would compensate the vice presidents for their political donations, and which would have been illegal, obviously. And so I said that Sam Ahmad came out saying, no, when I was vice president, every donation I made to the Liberal Party in particular, I did it from my own pocket, was never reimbursed and what have you. But also we hear about their practices to develop business, give money to political parties, provincial, federal, municipal, make sure you invite your clients to golf, tennis, hunting, everything you could.
Is this going to change the mentality, you think? Like in terms of how people do business, do you really think it has had an effect already?
Oh, yes, yeah. Yes. I think since UPAC has been put together, everybody is going around, very, very tight. And those practices have all changed. I mean, nobody wants to go to a box at Place Bell or, mm-hmm. or at the Bell Center or anywhere else. Politicians don't want to be seen there anymore. No, I think the practices have changed quite a bit. Also, the laws about party financing have changed because now it's not the individuals that are really financing political parties. It's the state because it's you and I and all our listeners through their taxes because now the political parties get big yearly grants from the government of Quebec. So, no, it has changed. The practices have changed. And it's good for our society because they've really gone overboard.
So what if we see some M&As at the game tomorrow afternoon? Should we start calling the cops?
Well, don't worry. They won't be there. I don't think nobody wants to get tickets anymore.
I guess not.
But I mean, in those documents, obviously, people are embarrassed right now. But I think there's going to be charges eventually laid. And other people are going to be on the hot seat. So because Roche was so present and Marc-Yvan Côté was so close to the provincial Liberals for years and years. Remember, it's the same Marc-Yvan Côté that appeared before the Gomery Commission and showed the size of the envelopes of cash that he was carrying around. And so so this is not the end. This is just the beginning of the story. I want to have a thought for Native women. Last week we discovered that the United Nations blamed Canada. They had a report saying, how we mistreat our people, especially the natives.
And now the RCMP has its own report.
Yeah, because everybody, all those communities, people were, lobbying group were saying, do something about it. It's outrageous. Well, now we've got the numbers. And between 1980 and 2012, 1,017 women were either killed or disappeared and are missing. So this is, the natives represent 4.3% of the population,
yeah.
of the overall female population. But they are 16% of females that have been killed, and 11.3% of missing women. So, I mean, the statistics are really troubling. There's violence in those communities. And so I don't know if it will help the government put together some commission of inquiry, but obviously this is a black eye for Canadian society, the way those Native women are Aboriginal women are being treated.
Because people just don't, because people just don't care?
Exactly. People don't care, and I mean those people don't have much power, they don't have much influence. You know, there are a multitude of solitudes for most of them.
The Mounties say they're sharing this data with other police forces, and they've directed their own divisions to review any outstanding matters, and they're also promising to add resources. But let's say the pressure was there, and as you just referenced, the UN report that came out last week, you know, if it wasn't for international condemnation, John, would we be even talking about this?
Well, that's probably the case, because those people are powerless, and so I think we've got to do something. I mean, we're a rich society, but there's a segment that has been forgotten for too long.
Have a great weekend, Jean.
You too. Bye-bye.
CJAD political insider Jean LaPierre. He joins Andrew in the mornings, every weekday morning, right after the 7:30 news, and Aaron right after the 5:30 news here in the afternoon.
You're listening to the Aaron Rand Podcast. Hear the show live weekdays 3 to 7 on CJAD 800.
That's a little something called the Washboard Boogie by none other than Washboard Hank, who's taking part. He's one of a number of acts taking part in the One Man Band Festival that actually started yesterday, but it continues through the weekend. And Washboard Hank is performing tonight at Camfe Campus here in Montreal. But he's in studio with me right now. There you go. I could use that as an intro, as a matter of fact. So do I call you Washboard or Hank? I think Hank works.
Hank's good.
Yep. Hank, it's a pleasure to meet you.
Well, it's a pleasure to meet you, too.
Where are you from?
I'm from Peterborough, Ontario.
Peterborough, Ontario. Terrific. How long have you been a one-man band? And for, you know, maybe before I ask you that, what are you wearing here? I see the banjo.
I've got a tenor banjo, a perfected gazoo, and a back drum that has a hi-hat on it.
What's a perfected gazoo?
That's perfection. That's perfection right there.
Okay, that's terrific. How long have you been doing this, Hank?
For 40 years now, at least.
Literally, as a one-man band performer?
Yep, I started playing the washboard 40 years ago, and I soon picked up the kitchen sink tuba, and I've had one-man bands of one kind or another since I was about 6 years old and saw Mary Poppins for the first time.
Oh, the whole Dick Van Dyke thing.
Yes.
Yeah,
and you know what?
Sense.
He's
faking.
I was
going to ask you why.
He's faking.
No, he's not.
He is.
Is he really?
Yeah.
Okay, actors, you know?
Yeah.
Hollywood. It's not the same. I was going to ask you, like, where does a kid get the idea to play the kitchen sink or something like that, you know?
Well, I don't know. Just grab anything and go... into it, and you'll be surprised
Excuse
what
me.
Sound you might
a little indigestion there, maybe. But
if you all smoke meat, it'll get you every time.
There you go. The challenges are obvious, Hank. So why not, you know, and this is not judgment, this is just a curiosity. Why not say just the guitar or, you know, just the piano or something like that? Or is that too boring?
Well, you know, a lot of things in life, you just sort of push a button and suddenly it happens. And I am against that. And I sort of want to have complex things that you look at and say, oh, that's doing this and this is doing that. And I think it's beautiful. So that's why I do it.
And you play originals, I believe?
Yes.
Covers also?
Oh, yes.
How many original songs do you have? After 40 years, I guess
hundred,
you got at least a couple hundred.
Hundred at least.
Wow. Wow. And it must be a blast. I mean, but then again, you have something goes wrong. I guess you have nobody else to blame, right?
Well, yes. And it's surprising. Something will generally go wrong every single show. But that's makes it interesting.
And we should point out there are one women bands also.
Oh, yes.
That are taking part in this
yes.
in this event mm-hmm. through this weekend. Hank, what are you going to play for us?
Well, here's a tune that might be popular if we have any trouble in the Crimea.
What do you call that?
That is the Light Brigade Overture by, I can't remember the guy's name.
Ah, what difference does it make?
But that quite a lovely tune.
How tough is it to, and by the way, the floor is like shaking here because you got both feet stamping, stomping on the ground. And the I read somewhere you're like, somebody described you as a cross between Stompin' Tom Connor and Jerry Lewis?
Yeah.
Not Jerry Lee Lewis, but Jerry Lewis?
Yes, yes.
I take that as a compliment, do you?
I do, I do. I respect both of them.
No question about it. Yeah, we still have a couple seconds here. Anything else you want to...
Well, here's a little song for anybody who's celebrating a birthday out there.
All right.
Oh, the world's a better place since you've been in it. And I'm talking each and every single minute. From the moment of your birth, it's been a better earth. The world's a better place since you've been in it.
I mean,
happy birthday.
Happy birthday. I mean, you've got to be in pretty good shape to do this, and you look to be pretty sturdy.
Yep.
A little red in the face, though. I guess the gazoo, that'll do that to you.
Well,
right?
that's my Molson complexion, I'm afraid.
Okay. How long is your set usually, Hank?
Well, I'll be doing about 40 minutes tonight, I think.
40 minutes.
Whatever. But I switch around. I have... Canada's indigenous musical instrument, the fallopian tuba, which I play with the guitar. That's a kitchen sink tuba. And then I play my Stradivarius washboard, of course, which has a hard hat with a bell on the front and a pie plate on the top, and a washboard that weighs about 40 pounds that has bells and horns. And I play it like a five-string banjo, and so I can actually get melodies out of my washboard, and it's... pretty frenetic sort of thing. It was been described as when I play washboard, it looks like Mussolini doing a speech on amphetamines.
That's a pretty good visual right there. Hank, listen, you're a terrific guy and obviously a lot of fun, and have a lot of fun in Montreal this weekend. I'm sure it's going to be a treat.
It's going to be a one-man bluegrass band as well tonight. Eric Royer up from Boston.
Oh, beautiful.
He plays bass, guitar and banjo all at once.
As long as it's not Milan Lucic, we're okay with that. Washboard Hank, tonight at Cafe Campus, and this event, this one-man band festival, continues all through the weekend. By the way, online, onemanbandfest.com if you're looking for some information. Hank, it was a real pleasure to meet you, and enjoy your time in Montreal this weekend.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Washboard Hank, the one and only.
Listen to the Aaron Rand Show live weekdays 3 till 7 on CJAD 800 and at CJAD.com.